61% of U.S. adults do not have a budget for their personal finances, and you'd be hard-pressed to find a financial tool less complicated than a basic budget, aside from possibly a wallet. I'm Gina Kaufman. On today's Central Standard, we're going to talk about financial literacy. Is it something that we learn in schools, at home? And if nobody taught us, how can we teach ourselves the skills we need? We'll want to hear from you, too. We'll be asking who taught you about managing money and whether the lessons stuck. Plus, last week we met some paddlers preparing for a boat race down the Missouri River.
It's the world's longest nonstop river race. And to be able to do that and say that you completed it is pretty awesome.
So how'd it go? We'll find out after this news. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Money often costs too much." Truer words have never been spoken. From the numbers themselves to the intimidating consequences of getting those numbers wrong, money and finance can be overwhelming. As with anything complicated and important, knowledge makes things a heck of a lot easier. So where do we get that knowledge? How and from whom do we get a financial education? I'm Gina Kaufman, here with the Central Standard's Cash Money Crew to discuss this very issue. Before we dive in, why don't you all introduce yourselves to our listeners?
Yes, I'm David Jackson with Waddell & Reed.
Hi, I'm Sandy Weaver, CPA Certified Financial Planner with Financial Security Advisors.
Hi, I'm Lucas Butchell. I'm a Certified Financial Planner at KHC Wealth Management.
The members of our Cash Money Crew visit us from the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City every month. So let's start with the numbers, guys. What do we know about financial literacy among the generations of Americans currently in their 20s and 30s, people currently making the kinds of decisions that will either set them up to live comfortably or not?
You know, I think what we're finding out is that these folks are surprisingly limited in their financial knowledge and their financial literacy overall. We see it with some surveys that we can look at from, 59% of these folks don't pay their bills on time to, college kids coming out with an average of $4,100 of credit card debt graduating from college. And that's not including the student loan debt, which pushes them up to upwards of $35,000. And these are averages.
Yikes.
So a lot of folks are kind of getting behind financially and showing that they don't have the proper skills to be able to really handle those or even understand exactly what they have. And that does set them back as they kind of move forward into the real world.
What would you consider to be a measuring stick for someone's basic financial literacy, as in a person who does not have like X, Y, or Z skill is functionally illiterate when it comes to money?
I would measure if they have a bank checking account and if they reconcile it monthly, if they have a credit card, and if they are able to pay that off monthly, unless they intentionally have a big purchase that they intend to take extra time.
So this is interesting because literacy, as we're used to thinking of it, is having a certain ability to do something. There are lots of literate people who do not read frequently, but you're saying that financial literacy, it's in action.
Yes, yes. I think being able to, quote, operate a bank checking account and a credit card or debit card, both of those skills you need in today's society, and to do it without mishap.
What do you think are the main causes of financial illiteracy?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Surveys show that the average person gets their financial literacy from their parents. But what's to say that the parents know anything about finances, you know, which a lot of parents don't. We see it every day. So I know there's some initiatives, the state of Missouri being one, where they're teaching financial education in the high schools as a requirement. And that's something that should be taken across the nation because a lot of kids are getting into an adulthood and they're just not prepared because nobody's really taught them.
That's really interesting. I think especially nowadays after the recession that there is not as much sort of agreed upon wisdom when it comes to what is a good financial decision and how do you approach finances. There's a lot more disagreement about these things, or it seems that way anyhow. And so I wonder if teaching teaching financial literacy in the schools could be venturing into territory almost as subjective and personal as teaching, say, religion.
I don't think so. I think just getting a good baseline of how money works, how your finances work, why is it important to have a credit score and what impacts your credit score? Do you have a savings account or do you need an investment account? When should you start saving for retirement? Those kind of baseline pieces of information, I think, are helpful for anybody.
That piece of information, like what affects your credit score, is that something that most people know?
The average young person has no clue. You know, the average, and you know, I don't know if you've heard about a lot of the students in college who are getting credit cards, even though they have no income. And they think it's free money. And then so when they graduate and it's like, okay, you need to start paying this off, and they find themselves with a mountain of debt. So, and then understanding that if you don't pay your bills on time, like Lucas was mentioning, how that's going to make it harder for you to get loans in the future, or you're going to pay more for those loans in the future. I mean, it all has consequences.
So you were mentioning that there's an initiative to teach more financial literacy in high schools. What is done in schools as of now?
My understanding, I'm not an expert on it, but my understanding is that there is a core requirement in the Missouri schools, at least, to take, what is it, one or two semesters, I think, of basic financial literacy. But wow. I'm not an expert on it. I hope maybe we'll get a caller who knows a little bit more about it than I do.
Yeah, maybe so. And so then there's this other piece of it. That's the parents, what people learn in their families. Do parents consciously realize how much of the responsibility for teaching financial awareness is actually on them?
You know, I think generally, yes. I think parents do understand that that's one of their primary responsibilities. Unfortunately, I think they either just don't prioritize it or don't do a very good job of doing it. One of the things that I see a lot is modeling behavior is by far the most powerful teacher for kids, is what are you doing in your household and what are you modeling for your kids as an example. And then also taking the time to involve the kids in the kind of the day-to-day, month-to-month activity that you're doing. So you could have a parent that does a really good job, you know, managing their finances, saving for retirement or major purchases. But if they never bring the kid in and you know, there's never any discussion at the dinner table or opportunity to pop the hood and look at an investment account, you know, that knowledge just doesn't pass through osmosis. So I would challenge parents to really think about that and think about the example they're setting for their kids and how to teach.
I guess I would disagree with Lucas. I don't think that the current generation of parents is doing a good job of teaching kids. I don't think they're aware of their responsibilities either. One of the statistics we have is 2008, but it says at that time 34% of parents were teaching their teenagers how to balance a checkbook. You know, that should be 100%. And one of the things we're finding when we work with clients is a lot of current adults these days don't balance their checkbooks, don't reconcile accounts. You know, it's more of they'll tell me what my balance is when I check it online or when I get the statement at the end of the month. So I think we have a couple of generations here who have poor money habits, and to what we really would like to see is them to have, you know, refine their money habits and develop good, sound habits and then, you know, relay those to children. But that's not happening.
So it's like someone who's never unclogged a drain trying to teach someone how
yes,
to be a plumber.
Exactly. Good analogy.
Yeah, I love this statistic. It shows here 69% of parents feel less prepared to talk about finances to their kids than having that sex talk. You know, so
yeah.
Parents really are not prepared.
Well, there's something that I've been wondering about thinking about this topic, which is that, you know, there's something to be said psychologically and developmentally for a period of time where kids just take it for granted that their needs are met. And raising a child's financial awareness is a really great thing to do. How do you do that without making them feel sort of insecure or like they're carrying the weight of financial burden on themselves?
I think you need to sit down at the kitchen table and they need to have money coming in. That can be an allowance. That can be we're going to pay so much on your phone bill. You know, if you exceed those limits, then you're on your own. But sitting down and starting small with a couple of those examples and working through a month of spending with them. This is how much I've got at the beginning of the month that we're going to give you or we're going to pay for you. And, you know, if you exceed that at the end of this month, then, you know, you're going to have to, you know, go sack some groceries down the street.
Yeah, I really think that giving kids choices makes a huge difference so that they start understanding. It's like, yeah, money does not grow on trees. You can either buy this or you can buy that. but you can't have everything because, yeah, there's a limit.
Let's get our listeners in on this. Do you remember learning your own formative lessons about money? How were you taught, and did the lessons stick? 816-235-2888 is the number to call. That number again is 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman, sitting here with the Cash Money Crew on Central Standard. And Cash Money Crew, what about you guys? Do you remember some of your earliest financial lessons, things that maybe your parents or some other adult did to teach you a lesson about money?
Well, here's something I'll throw in. My old man used to work in Omaha at the Omaha Country Club. And he had come home to and talk to me about this really nice gentleman that he met at the country club and how this man knew all everything there was to know about investing. Turns out the man was Warren Buffett. But my dad never took Warren Buffett's advice, never bought a share of stock in his life or any kind of investment. So, you know, I could have had a head start if you would have listened to Warren.
Here you are today, a working staff, and you could have been on Easy Street.
I could have been set by now.
That's funny. Anyone else?
Yeah, I remember especially my mother absolutely despised debt. And it was one of those things that was it was a real pride for her that, you know, be able to have a clean slate, you know, nothing out there. I remember her, you know, talking about when we'd be making a family purchase, either from purchasing a car to whatever the case may be, is that you denied yourself and the concept of taking out a loan wasn't even an option. It was, no, you just defer the purchase until you have the money saved up to do whatever you want.
And I've heard it that's stealing from your future self.
I've never heard it that way, but I think that's an interesting way to frame it. And so that's something that is kind of was just taken for granted at my house and kind of gets hardwired into you because it's just consistent messaging.
Our first car was a used car that was given to us. I have a brother, so this was the rule we had. And then once we got out of the house in high school, then we had to buy our cars thereafter. And then the other thing was we had to go to work. And I was from Iowa, so again, I, you know, pulled beans and things out of cornfields. But in college, the tuition and books were paid. Everything else is on your own dime. So you had to work and save for all your beer money in college.
Well, let's back up and go through some of the stages of financial literacy and education. Let's start with elementary age kids. What do they need to know, and what lessons are they even capable of understanding at that age?
Well, you know, I think the idea of choices, I think, is really important. And giving them some kind of structure with a budget, you know. So you start maybe with an allowance, and it's like, okay, you're going to get, I don't know what kids get for allowances anymore. It's like, I used to get like $5 and I thought it was all the money in the world. I don't know what kids get now.
It sounds reasonable.
Yeah. It's a place to start.
Yeah. But yeah, give them that so they have their own responsibilities with money. And then if you could start teaching them, maybe put some of this, you know, this allowance aside so that down the road you'll have some extra money if you want to buy something big.
One of the things we do with our kids, and we're starting early. I mean, we're talking 3, 4, 5 years old is teaching them. It's called Share, Save, Spend. You can, if you Google that, you can find a really good website and program on it. But basically, it's a concept where you have three piggy banks. You have one for sharing, so giving to charity. One for saving, so that deferred concept of I'm going to put money aside today and save it for something in the future. And then spend, and that's what society, especially marketing and advertisers, tell you should do with all the money that you have is spend. And so acknowledging that it's okay to spend too, but kind of dividing that money up and then having a specific purpose. So it's purpose-based attitudes with money. And you can have it be fun. I mean, you know, having opportunities to give to either church or at Christmas time, give to a charity and involve the kids in it. So just teaching them very basic concepts about that. And kind of inherently the choices kind of, well, I'm distributing my money evenly for these different choices that I'm going to get to make or I'm going to have to make with these funds that are in these banks.
What about teenagers? There are a lot of different kinds of opportunities that probably arise once the kids in question are no longer totally kids.
Yeah, there are a couple. I'm thinking of closing cars. If you have an allowance or a budget that you allow each child to have, then if they want something more than that, then, you know, communication is key. Sit down and work out some kind of agreement. You know, we'll pay for the first $75. You need to come up with the next $75 if you want these $150 pair of special shoes. The other thing is about cars. Who does buy that first used car? Is it going to be the parents? Is it going to be the child or a combination of both? You might say to the child, you pay the first $2,000, we'll pay for the rest. And then the insurance premium, how is that going to be handled? Because that's going to be high. And I think you bring them to the insurance agent and let them see, you know, what the insurance company is looking at on their driving records so that they see what impacts that premium.
I have kind of a philosophical question here, which is once they're at that teenager stage, do you monitor all of the choices that they make, or do you give them the freedom to make mistakes and learn from them before it's maybe too late and the consequences are worse? I mean, the consequences are always bad for making a bad financial decision.
I think the latter. I think you give them, you know, guidance and communication, but if they do make a mistake, then you need to stick to guns and teach the lesson, because you may not be around their entire life. Your job as a parent is to teach.
And that is the key, is you can't come in and bail them out. And that's the nature, I think, of parents, is you want to come in and alleviate the pain and you know, allowing the child to the freedom to make that mistake. And setting them up so it's not a killer one, but then allowing them to live with the consequences, whether that's, you know, I don't get to buy that really nice pair of shoes that I wanted to because I spent all my money at the arcade, or whatever the choice was, that ultimately impacts them. And then that's the teaching moment.
And we were talking about financial literacy in schools earlier, and as of 2011, Missouri is one of the states that does mandate classes in financial education. Let's get to our callers now. We're going to go to John in Blue Springs, who called 816-235-2888 to share the lessons he learned in financial literacy and how he learned them. That number again, 816-235-2888. Good morning, John in Blue Springs. Hi, John. All right, we'll get back to John shortly. David, I wonder if you want to weigh in on any of what you were just hearing about as far as at what point you let go, let them make mistakes?
I think a big part of it is whose money is it? You know, so if the teenager is out there making their own money, you're going to give them a lot more latitude than if you're providing them some money and, you know, giving them the spending, you know, because you have a little bit more control and a vested interest. But it is really important for the kid to get out there and make their own mistakes, but you need to be aware of what those mistakes are so they can be teaching moments.
And more on that, teaching moments. What are some good teaching moments?
One thing that I really like is you know, it seems like a lot of the teaching moments we've been focusing on are kind of negative ones. One thing I really like as a positive one is kind of a matching program. So if you're a teenager saving for that first car or trying to save money for college or something like that, is kind of making a deal with them. If it's something that you agree with, do a matching program. So say, hey, if you're going to, you know, work this summer and put money away for your first car, I'll match you 50 cents on the dollar, a dollar for dollar. And kind of you bring some skin to the game, but also it naturally incents them to spend more because they can see that account growing faster. And that, you know, not unlike your employer helping you with retirement, is a really nice way to get some positive reinforcement with kids and an opportunity to teach and have those discussions as well.
I think when they get their first job, and we did encourage that pretty early with our son, but when he did get that, I walked with him down to Valley View Bank, and he opened his first account, got a debit card, and of course he learned the idea of, that was the checking account with a credit card, or checks against it. But he learned that a debit card is instant debit, and a check you get 2 or 3 days float.
And important lesson.
When your paycheck is only $100 and you get a $25 NSF charge, that's a big deal. And it was so nice. So we walked back in, and the woman banker walked him through, you know, what had happened. He'd charged before, you know, check got in, and they erased the first NSF charge the first time. But it was a great teaching moment for him.
What about trips to the grocery store? I remember one of my first lessons was a weird game that we used to play with grocery store receipts, where we were trying to get as close as we could to understanding how much things cost. I mean, that is such a basic lesson, but at some point you do have to gain that understanding of how much should you expect things to even cost. How do you begin teaching that lesson, like understanding whether you're being ripped off, for example?
Well, I do remember we kind of played that game as kids, where we get to the counter and we try to estimate how much the bill was going to come to. And so, yeah, you know, just formulating those understandings of things do cost. And, you know, if you can find something on sale, it's going to benefit you down, your dollar will stretch further. One thing I do want to bring up before we get off that topic, though, is when helping your kids to understand money, one thing I did was open up an investment account for my son when he was still fairly young. And I started showing him his balances on a quarterly basis, saying, hey, you see how your money is growing, or see how you lost money? So that once he became an adult, the idea of investing and money working for him is just a natural concept. You know, he was immediately first job, wants to jump into the 401k and start getting his money to grow. So I think you can't start early enough with that and expose the kids to that.
Let's do talk about when people become young adults. 18 years old, you're old enough to have a credit card in your own name. What should a parent or someone have taught the 18-year-old before that 18th birthday?
I think the concept of interest and the cost of money is really important, and kind of how that works with a credit card, also the fees that would be involved. So, you know, a lot of parents are really shy about kind of introducing the credit card because they see that as a ticket to bad choices. I would argue the opposite, that the kid is going to have the opportunity to have that credit card when they walk on campus that first day of college. And so if you haven't trained them and taught them and given them the opportunity to learn, they're going to learn probably the hard way or from their friends the first week of college. So, you know, getting in front of them, sitting down with your credit card statement, walking them through some of the basics and explaining that 18% interest is not a reasonable rate that you should pay. And then having the opportunity to just run some basic calculations with them, show them, you know, the choice of using a credit card and how it can be beneficial and convenient, but also the trouble you can get to, especially if you're using it to outspend your means.
And speaking of early adulthood, by the time you're 26 now, you're going to, for sure by then, need to know some basic literacy when it comes to health insurance and how insurance works. If you haven't already had to figure that out with respect to a car, by then you're certainly going to have to. Terms like deductible, copay, premium, coinsurance, a recent study showed that only about 1 in 10 Americans actually understand these terms.
Oh, I think that's true. It's difficult for us adults to even understand how the medical industry charges. But one of the things I think is so important, and Lucas mentioned this also, is sitting down with your children and showing them utility statements, showing them your mortgage statement, so that they understand some of the facts of life. That, you know, if they want to sit in the shower till the hot water tank empties, it costs money. You know, so those actions, and the same way with medical insurance, to perhaps if you're buying it through an employer, with an employer, you know, walking through your employee benefit statement with them so that they see some of those things.
Oh, yeah. And you think about that first paycheck, sitting down with your kid with first paycheck and explaining what all those deductions are. It's like, you made some money, but now look at this. They took money out of your check, too. Why is that? What is this all about?
You know, that's a good point. I remember a first paycheck being shocked that it wasn't just the amount I made per hour times the number of hours. There was something missing.
Usually a big bite, bigger than you expect.
Well, and, you know, when it comes to adulthood, those of us who did not go to school for finance, as all of you did, have tended to pick up information about money and finance in a very piecemeal or haphazard fashion. And a lot of us actually learn new financial skills as we need them. But we want to be sure we're getting credible information from good sources. Are there resources that you recommend, say magazines you could subscribe to, books that you think are really great?
I think, and a lot of financial planners don't like her, I think Susie Orman does a really good job of covering basics.
You do.
I do. I know. But
it sounds like with a grain of salt.
I know. But she does. And there are other reputable sources, you know, Forbes and Bloomberg, if you want to get some of the heavier ones. But those are all good. But one of the things I do think is so important, because it's complicated, is to do some research. Don't just believe the first thing you read. Check two or three sources.
You know, I think that if you're talking investing, I think the investment companies have really done a lot better job lately in preparing and defining things for folks. Places like Fidelity and Schwab especially, they'll have really good educational pieces that are very basic for folks that are just opening an account, as what are you buying, what are you trying to do, and kind of walking you through your objectives. I've been really impressed with the direction the investment industry has gone in educating, because I think they're realizing that folks aren't prepared when they sit down to open an account.
Yeah, there's so much financial information out there, and sometimes it's shouted at you, it's screamed at you, and it leaves people in a lot of cases where they just don't know what to do. So it can be really complicated, and that's why I'm so glad that, you know, states like Missouri are offering, you know, just basic financial literacy. I read something a while right after the recession from Ben Bernanke, who was chairman of the Federal Reserve at the time, and he said, if adult Americans had been more financially illiterate, there's a good chance we wouldn't have had the depth of the recession that we had, because a lot of it was due to poor decisions people made when it came regarding their mortgages or second mortgages, et cetera.
Yep. There's one more author for parents and children, Susan Beecham. She wrote The Millionaire Kid Club, and that tries to educate both parents and children, you know, at the same time on financial literacy skills.
What are some red flags to look out for in terms of financial advice or information as people are trying to educate themselves who might not have all the information they need? Is there something that you'd say, like, this is a red flag, steer clear of this advice?
A couple things that stand out to me is if it's too good to be true, walk away. I mean, and gut feeling there. Don't ignore that instinct. The other thing is, if you ever get kind of time pressure or pressure applied by somebody to take action, you got to do this, you got to do it quick. Just really take a step back and question what the motivation is to pressure you, because a lot of times that's a sales tactic and not good financial advice.
When it comes to being financially self-taught on an as-needed basis, are there reasons why that is, like, kind of a bad way to go about it? Because it's true that, like, learning how to manage paying rent and all of the bills that come with being responsible for being the person receiving the gas bill, the electric bill, all of that stuff, in some ways, the only way to learn it is to do it. But what are there pitfalls to learning about it as you go?
Well, yeah, as you go, you're going to make mistakes. And so by, you know, learning from somebody else, you can avoid from some of those mistakes as you go. But, yeah, the best teacher is doing it yourself and, you know, making those mistakes naturally.
I think one of those is to have a natural curiosity and to talk with peers and older people about what their experiences are. If your water bill consistently comes in at $500 a month and your neighbors are paying $100 a month, you should question. You should call up. So even though you have a lack of background, like a background by which to judge, I think just talking and reading and listening to shows like this, you know, can help you do your research. And sometimes those people who do research end up being very, very good financial managers.
When it comes to one generation teaching another about financial wisdom, it seems like one of the things that's tricky about that is that things change. The world that the six-year-old is in now, that is the basis for the lesson, the 30 or 40 year old is teaching, it's going to be a different world later, and we don't have crystal balls. How do you give that child the ability not only to learn the lesson you're teaching, but to adapt the lesson?
I think that's a really great point. I was smiling when Sandy was talking about balancing your checkbook, because I don't balance my checkbook, and I haven't for years and years and years.
Because how often do you even write a check?
Exactly. But what I do is I use Quicken, which is just a software program for money management, and I'm regularly involved in categorizing and understanding my finances. So I think, and you know, Mint.com is a really great tool that's right. You know, app, yep, on a phone to manage cash flow, that I think it would be a nice substitute for that, that people can check out. And I think that's the direction it goes with younger folks, is there's all kinds of new tools. And just because I have a ledger and went through and the traditional way of balancing my checkbook, you may not need to do. I think the key lesson there is you need to be involved and be regularly looking at your finances, your bills, and making sure what you think is happening is really what's happening, so not ignoring it. But I think the using the opportunity to use technology and stay involved, but I think the kind of the basic tenets are paying attention, so being active in it, and educating yourself, whatever source that comes from, as long as it's seems to be credible. Being educated on the topics and understanding is important.
We're going to give our phone lines a try one more time. Let's see about John in Blue Springs. Hi, John.
Yes, I'm there. How are you?
Great. How about you?
Good. Thank you. And thank you for taking my call. Great comment. Yeah, my son, I'm a single dad, and I've always exposed my son to my financial situation, decisions, and everything at a very early age. And I think even for small decisions, you know, the younger they are, the smaller the decisions I would try and have them partake in. For example, if it's buying a TV or something, but things that are normally for me, I would involve him in the decision making, because I would say, you know, whatever is left, whatever I do not spend is yours. So, you know, help make the decision, and if you think it's worth it to get this, great, we get it. If you think it's something that is wasteful, then, you know, we shouldn't. But I always involve them in decisions that I would say most people only think it is their decision and not their child. And I think our children hopefully inherit everything that we have left for them. So,
thanks, John.
A little bit.
Yeah, thank you. It sounds like John really involves his child in not just letting them know what kinds of decisions are being made, but he involves his son in the thought process behind the decision.
I agree, and I think that that's important, and it ties in with your question to Lucas earlier, is how do you, even though the technologies will change, you know, the concepts that you want to, and some of those concepts are, you know, good use of your money, don't spend more than you have, don't use debt unwisely. But those, you're teaching concepts, paying off credit cards, if you're still using those, paying off credit cards monthly.
Let's hear from Aretha in Hyde Park. Hi, Aretha.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Doing great.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Well, my input on that is that back in, I'm a single mom. I raised my children. I invested in properties. I own a home in Hyde Park that I bought with cash. I paid my way through college. And how my children, they always wanted to buy. And I said, okay, how do I figure out to tell these children why we can't do that? And I said, okay, I know. I got the Monopoly game out, and I said, okay, now, guys, you got rent, you got food, you got transportation, you got to get your clothes, and you got to get back and forth to school. Now, I gave each one of them X amount of dollars, and I said, okay, now you guys' rent payment is due. They would give me that money. Now we got to get transportation. You got to give me that money. And by the time we could, then they'd be flabbergasted, like, Mom, we have no money. I was like, okay, calm down. Then we'd go back through this game again. I was, now, listen. I'm going to give you X amount of dollars. You invest in this property. You invest in this property. And what you're investing in is this, thus, and so on and so forth. Then they were like, oh. And then I said, now we're going to go at all my utility payments. Can list each one of them. Lights gets this much. Water gets this much. Phone gets this much. Gas gets that much. This is much for food. And they would look at that, and I said, okay, now how much do I have left if I only have them out? So I started them early in life, and it has panned out. I'm invested strictly in myself and in my family, and it's worked out for me. Thank you guys so much for having this
conversation. Way to go, too.
Congratulations.
Thanks, Aretha. Yeah, so using Monopoly, the idea of using a game seems really smart, because that idea of you aren't scaring kids about is there enough, but you are teaching the idea that decisions must be made and all cannot be had.
Oh, that is so huge. I think that's a really effective way to get the message across. Make it a game, but then it dovetails into reality pretty nicely. So my congratulations to Aretha. Great job.
Any parting thoughts from you, Sandy Weaver, before we wrap up this conversation about financial literacy?
Sure. Taking the time to sit down and communicate and relay some of the concepts and guidance that you have on financial management. That's important.
Yep. Last thought would be just to be engaged with your kids and don't think that the things that you're working on, thinking about from a financial perspective will be boring or otherwise not useful. So involve them and engage.
And David Jackson, a parting word?
Just live within your means.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this month's conversation with the Cash Money Crew. Lucas Butchell, Sandy Weaver, and David Jackson, thanks so much for being here.
Great to be here.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
The members of our Cash Money Crew visit us from the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. When we get back, we'll be hearing about some boat racers who went down the Missouri River 340 miles. Check up on that in a minute.